funeral, or that message, the poem that he reads at the movie Four Weddings and a Funeral. It's a poem called Funeral Blues, very common to be read at funerals. As a matter of fact, the book that our men's group is going through on Monday night that kind of talks about life and death and dealing with it and sorting it out actually mentions it there in one of the chapters, which is kind of where it brought home for me. It was one of the books that I read about a week or so after Melissa's passing. And in there, he opens up the poem and he talks about the haze that you end up in, that you find yourself in when you lose somebody. And you just feel like as if you're kind of sleepwalking through life. Just let everything in the world stop because I can't cope or deal with anything else more than just the grief I'm dealing with. All I can focus in on is this moment. And then you move from this haze that you're in to somehow trying to grasp and get a handle on just what it is that you've lost. And there in that second or third stanza, he goes in and he says, "She was my north and my south, my east and my west, my working week." And I change this line and just say, "She was my Sunday best. My noon, my midnight, my talk, my song. I thought that this love would last forever. And I was wrong." But then Auden goes on from the haze to the loss, and he goes on to that point of utter despair, and he says, "The stars aren't wanted now, so put out every one. Pack up the moon and dismantle the sun. Pour away the ocean and sweep up the wood. For nothing now can ever come to any good." And unless you've been through an absolutely devastating loss, then you don't know what it's like to hear that soft, seductive whisper of despair whisper in your ear and call you and try to lure you to come down its dark alley, that dead-end road that just says, "Give up. There's nothing else here for you. There'll never be another sunny day. There'll never be anything ever to be happy about or to laugh about or to rejoice about." And it's hard not listening to that voice. And every time I would hear that voice, I would go and I would try to reach out. And I was just grasping. I was looking for somebody who'd been down this road before and could lead me through it. And I know in that moment I probably should have like turned to God or the Bible or something, but quite frankly at that moment I really just didn't feel like talking to God. I didn't really care what he had to say. You know, I knew on some level he was behind all this, or at the very least, he knew about it. I was ticked off that he didn't let me know. At least that's what I felt at the time. And so I just turned to friends, and I started texting and Facebooking and emailing and calling people I knew who'd been down this road. And I just said, "You know, how did you get through this? What did you do?" And on day three, I went out to... We went out to a restaurant and I met with somebody who had just lost their significant other that year. And I said, "You know, you look like you're doing really good. How did you make it through? How did you get through this? Because right now I'm in just like this haze and I can't see any way out and I don't know where I'm at and I just feel lost." And she looks at me and she says, "I was in that stage for about 4 months. My first thought was, great. This is going to suck. I don't want to sit here for 4 months in this." And then she said, "Well, you know, I grew up in church, but I hadn't gone to church in a long time when this happened to me. And then somebody invited me to Essential. And so I showed up in January and I was there for the Faith and Doubt series, and everything that you said in that series just really, really connected with me because I had a lot of those doubts." And she said, "But the real turning point for me was your Easter message. And that's really what kind of snapped out of me. And that right there was kind of like what brought about my healing full circle. And it was from that point forward that I was able to move on. It was you." And I'm sitting there and I'm looking at her and I'm thinking to myself, okay, listen, I don't need a pep talk right now. I know you see me, I'm kind of down, I'm kind of, you know, sad. I don't need you to kind of like, you know, pump me up and just give me some sort of inflated words and try to make me feel good and just try to say, hey, you know, you're really good and you're wonderful and I really, you know, really think that, you know, you really would help me. And so feel better about yourself because you're the one who helped me. I didn't want a pep talk. I wanted direction and I wanted truth and I wanted to know where to turn. And so I looked back at her and I said, seriously, I need to know. I don't want a pep talk. I need to know what really helped. And then she got like this weird look on her face. She's like, I don't know what else to tell you. It was you. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, you know, I want a book. I want an author. I want somebody who's smart. I want somebody that I can trust because right now I don't trust me and I can't get me to talk to me. And so I went home. I was kind of frustrated. But I went home that night and I just started thinking about my Easter sermon. And you got to know, of all the sermons I preached last year, I knew the Easter sermon inside and out, forwards and backwards, better than any message I gave all last year. And it wasn't just because it was the Easter message. Honestly, it was because of the hate mail that it generated. You know, and I don't get much hate mail. I mean, I really don't. And usually whenever I get hate mail, I call it hate mail, you know, criticisms, basically saying, what the heck was that? Thanks for ruining my Easter. I mean, I call that hate mail. Definitely not encouraging. But you got to know, like 99% of the time when I get those things is from somebody who showed up here at church expecting us to be a different kind of church, and they're really ticked off because we didn't sing Amazing Grace the way they did in their grandmother's church, and they're really ticked off because I got on jeans or flip-flops or something else, and they basically, you know, throw a bunch of rocks, and I look at them like, yeah, oh, well, we were never the church for you, you know, see ya. And it kind of stinks on email because you don't, like, you can't ball something up and throw it across the room. You're just like, you know, it doesn't really do much. But on Easter, I didn't just get, I mean, I got several comments from people who I don't think have ever been to the church since. But one of the emails I got was from a close friend. And you got to know there's a proverb that says the wounds of a friend can be trusted. But an enemy just multiplies kisses. Another enemy is just going to be like, hey, great sermon there, Pastor, great sermon there. And then they walk out in the parking lot and trash you. But when somebody who you trust, who you consider a friend, writes and says, what the heck was that? Thanks for ruining my Easter. She didn't really say that, but it was, that's a paraphrase, I guess. It does make you go back and say, yeah, what the heck was that? What did I say? And so I went back and I re-scrutinized my notes and I listened to it over and over and over again. And I called up a friend of mine, who's a pastor, and I said, here's what I said on Easter. Did I just mess everything up? And we talked about it. I probably spent 3-4 hours on the phone. 2 days later, I'm in an elders meeting, and I said, all right, guys, I'm a mess right now. Did I just mess everything in our church up on Easter? I mean, did I share something that wasn't true? Was that inappropriate? Was it mistimed? You know, what in there should I have done differently? You tell me. And so I sat there with our elder team, and they went through and scrutinized the message. And I got to be honest with you. I was in like this sort of semi pastoral depression funk after Easter, really thinking that I derailed our church for like a year's time. Because Easter is, you know, kind of a big day usually for churches. And I'm thinking, you know, I just butchered it. I totally blew it. And nobody's even going to be at church next week. It's kind of how you feel. It's just everything gets blown out of proportion. I don't know if you ever do that when you're depressed or frustrated. So I'm thinking, you know, nobody's ever going to show up at this church ever again. They're all leaving because that's pretty much what all the emails said. And, well, my friend email said, I'm with you. I just didn't like that. We're not going anywhere. Don't think that. And I'm thinking, great. You're going to be around to send more of these. You know, you kind of have these thoughts. And, hey, how you doing? What's up, girlfriend? I'm in church. That's going to come off really weird on the soundtrack. I don't know. But what God was doing in that week that miserable post-Easter depression funk. I didn't know at the time. He was saying, Steve, in exactly 3 months to the day from Easter, your world's going to come crashing down. The rocks that you have your feet on and where you're standing right now is going to be ripped out from underneath you, and you're going to need a rock that you can stand on. You're going to need something that when you feel like you're falling, you need to know what will catch you. And what you said on Easter, you need to know that you know that you know it is true and it is real and it is authentic and it is God and it is what truly means to follow after Jesus Christ. Because if you're wavering on that in just the middle, just a little bit, you're not going to make it in 3 months. I didn't know that's what God was doing. I didn't know that's how he was using my friend. But I know now. And you might be thinking, well, I forgot what was your Easter message. Sorry. What was it? Well, if you remember, we had just gone through a whole series on doubt. And after coming to that series on doubt, I kind of thought to myself, I kind of need to balance that out a little bit by bringing out faith. Because I just spent like, 2 months talking about how, hey, we never really can know about, right? And so I came back and I said, there's this passage in the Bible in Hebrews chapter 11 that basically it's this encouragement saying, listen, these are people you can look to who lived it out and lived out a life. Look at all of the stuff that God did to them. Look at all the stuff that God did for them. And then you get down to the end of Hebrews 11. And this is where my debate was. I wasn't sure if I should finish off Hebrews 11 the week before Easter or use it on Easter. And I knew with every fiber of my being that it had to be on Easter. And what happens is that Hebrews 11 kind of reads like an infomercial for Jesus. And it kind of basically says, if you got faith, look at all this great stuff that's going to happen to you. I mean, it's almost like listening to Joel Osteen or Benny Hinn every week. I mean, it's just, hey, you got faith, you're going to get a front row parking space. That's all you need to do. I mean, you just need to trust after God. You're a daughter of the King. He's going to share out his blessings on you. Nothing bad's ever going to happen. It's kind of how Hebrews 11 reads. And so I just kind of pick up towards the end of it. And it says, and what more shall I say? I don't have the time to tell you about Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah and David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms and administered justice and gained what was promised and shut the mouths of lions and quenched the fiery flames and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned into strength and became powerful in battle and routed out foreign armies, and their women received back their dead to life again. And I mean, doesn't that just sound like an infomercial? Doesn't that just sound like some guy who's making $20,000 a month just by sitting on his couch working a few hours a week? I mean, isn't that kind of how that reads? And if that's all you ever heard from a preacher, if that's all you ever read out of the Bible, you'd be thinking, all I got to do is just have a mustard seed size of faith and God's going to basically open up the candy store of heaven and give me my health and my wealth and everything else I ever asked for. But then the next line is kind of like, but unless you think this is what always happens when you live by faith, I got to be honest with you and tell you the others. I got to give you the fine print. And what's the fine print always say under the testimony of the guy who's making 20 grand a month just by working on his couch a few moments? Booyah. So the writer of Hebrews says, hey, by the way, results aren't typical. Because I got to let you know there were others. There were a lot of others who were tortured and refused to be released so that they might gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, while still others were chained and put up in prison. They were stoned. They were sawed in two. Sorry, isn't that just a little bit extreme? I mean, this isn't like a David Copperfield moment. Some dude, because he believed in Jesus Christ and followed after him, was actually sawed in two. That's a bad day. I mean, that's a serious disclaimer, isn't it? You don't really hear that with the TV preachers. Follow after Jesus, but I got to let you know, there's a chance. Since they went about in sheepskins and goatskins, which I don't think has ever been fashionable. Destitute, persecuted, mistreated. Some were put to death by the sword. he almost just kind of, you can see him just kind of looking off in the distance and says, but the world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains and in caves and in holes in the ground. And these were all commended for their faith. It wasn't because these people didn't have faith. Rather, it was because of their faith that this stuff happened. And yet none of them received what had been promised. And God had planned something better for them and for us, so that only together with us, they would be made perfect. And in that message, I started off and I talked about how oftentimes as a pastor, other people come to me when their life is falling apart. When they went into a hospital expecting fully to believe that when the doctor said, hey, you know, there's a 90% chance, you know, your wife will be absolutely fine. You know, even in that slight 10% chance, we'll just give her a transplant. She'll come home on time. You're going to be fine. Nothing to worry about. You just sit back, relax, let, you know, the body kind of do its own healing. We got all the medication here. We got her in time. Everything's going to be good. Nothing to worry about. And then the rug gets pulled out from under you, and they come into their pastor and they say, what the heck? Where's God in all this? And it's in that moment that as a pastor, I want to lie to them and just tell them that, you know, God's going to make everything okay. But I know too many verses like what we just read in Hebrews to say to them, you know, if you just pray, God, everything's going to work out. I mean, I know I prayed. I know many of you pray. I prayed with so much faith that when the doctor came in and said, pretty much that it's inevitable that your wife is going to lose this battle. I prayed with so much faith. I believed more in God's power and what I knew he was going to do than what that doctor was saying to me. So don't tell me she died because I didn't have enough faith. I believe God more than I believe that doctor. I prayed all night. And you know, it's in those moments where God doesn't come through for you the way you wanted him to. And it's really hard to not feel betrayed by God. I mean, seriously. It's like, you know, God, I know you don't owe me anything, but I don't think this was too much to ask. And it's funny because on Easter, I mentioned that. I said, you know, probably some of you have been there where you felt betrayed by God because you didn't get your miracle. And here I am 3 months later in that same moment of just feeling betrayed. And back on Easter, I shared about how you're not alone in this if you feel this way. I mean, you go back to Jeremiah, and Jeremiah, it says in Jeremiah chapter 20, after he's up talking on God's behalf and speaking the message that God asked him to speak to the people God asked him to speak to, it says he was beaten. And then he was put in stocks, so basically everybody in town could make fun of him and throw junk at him. And after he comes out of that experience, he gets alone with God and he says, God, you deceived me. And shame on me for letting you deceive me. I love the words of John the Baptist, and I know where he was at. He's in jail. He's on death row. And he sends a message to Jesus and he says, hey, I just got to know, are you really God? Or was I just a little off? And there's that little voice that whispers in the back of your mind when you pray and God doesn't come through for you. You begin to have that little voice that just says, is he really God or were you just a little off? And it's hard to move from that point to move over to where Job is at. Because you look at Job, and Job just says, you know, though he slay me, yet will I praise him. Or as the New Living says, you know, God might kill me, but what other hope do I have anyway? I remember just coming to the conclusion in the midst of this and just saying, you know, God, I know that you can bless me, and I know that you can do something amazing in my life because of this, but this isn't what I wanted. And this isn't the blessing I thought you had in store for me. And yet I know I don't got any promise that you're ever going to bless me for this. And the question comes back, are you okay with that? Can you get to the point where you say, God, you've given and you've taken away, but the name of the Lord shall be praised. On Easter, I shared a quote about this passage from Hebrews 11. It says, the greatest challenge is to cultivate such a deep and satisfying relationship with God that we rest in Him. Whether living or dying, comfortable or miserable, to cultivate that unshakable confidence that God Himself is better than anything that life can give us or that death can take away from us. And after reading that, I asked a few questions. And they were just kind of questions to throw out there. Are you willing to live a life that honors God and reflects His character and leaves the outcome up to Him? When you get to that moment in life where you realize that the road that God is leading you down isn't an outcome that you like, are you willing to say, God, I'm going to go forward in this and follow wherever you lead? And do you have the faith that God can do amazing things even if you never get what it is that you want? And as I concluded out that message on Easter, I asked, and do you have that same faith, that faith of Job, of Jeremiah, that if your life is that of an unsung hero like these here at the end of Hebrews 11, are you okay with that? And those are the questions that were stirring through my mind the week or so after she passed. And I got to tell you, I came out of there with a resounding yeah. Yeah, I am. You know, as I look out here at all you guys here today, just you being here, it's your testimony back to me saying, yeah, I am too. Yeah, there's this sense that we're all in this together, you know? She was my wife. She was your friend. You know, the role of a pastor's wife is more than just the spouse of a banker, you know? I mean, she's who a lot of you guys look to as for encouragement, inspiration. She led your Bible study. She watched your kids. She led you in worship. She took you out to lunch and she called you up when you were feeling down. She made you dinners. Some of you, she even spent the night at your house because you were too sick to take care of your kids. And so you've had to ask that same question of yourself. Can I still follow God if this is what it means to follow Him? Just when I see you walk in the room, I hear you saying back, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we all accept and understand at the end of the day, we don't follow a Savior who wears gold watches and drives a Rolls Royce. We follow a Savior who is on the path to a cross. But that cross ultimately led to what the writer of Hebrews says is a better resurrection. I got to tell you, it was a strange thing for me to go back and listen to that Easter message in the weeks following and tell me stuff that I knew was true but wasn't really what I wanted to hear. Because I got to be honest with you, I wanted to write hate mail too, but you know, you can't really write hate mail to yourself. Dear Pastor Steve, you suck as a pastor and I don't like what you said. I mean, at some point you're going to get committed to a mental hospital if you do that. And that's where like this whole weird It was almost like God's playing mind tricks on me. You know, he's like, you know, I know you're upset, but there's really nothing you can do about it. But I do want to conclude out with two of the other comments that were said, not by the wounds of a friend, but by stuff that ended up in the trash can. One said, you know, if this was someone's first glimpse of being saved, I'm not really sure I'd sign up. Then don't. I don't know what else to tell you. You know, long ago I made the decision as a pastor that I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to stand up here and tell you what you want to hear. You know, I get enough of that from department stores and car dealerships, old bait and switch. You know, they bring you in with the offer of something great. Then on the back end, you realize it's going to cost you more than you wanted to pay. And the deal ain't quite so good. Probably every one of you in here knows somebody, and maybe this was even your testimony for a time in your life, where somebody says, you know, after my dad died, I never went back to church. After blank happened, I never went back. Why? Somebody gave him an infomercial. Somebody promised them that following after Jesus was going to be something, you know, that was going to make all their dreams come true and was just going to be a candy store from heaven. You know, our goal has never been to grow this church. Our goal has always been to be an authentic representation of what God's church really is. I love Jim Collins, who wrote the book Good to Great, also wrote another book, a follow-up book called How the Mighty Fail. And in there he shares this truth. He says, you know, what happens with great companies is that eventually growth becomes their goal instead of the result. Did you get that? That growth becomes their goal instead of the result. You see, these companies became great not because they were trying to grow. These companies became great because they really were great at what it was that they were trying to do and to be and to become. And growth was just the result. And what God's saying to us as a church, if growth is ever your goal, you're going to fail. I mean, I'm looking out here today, and this room is packed, and it shouldn't be based on my Easter message. But here's what I know. If you're here because you want to be, and because you know the truth. And you said, I understand it's not really what I want, but sign me up anyway. Jesus one day shared a hard teaching because he never backed down from it. And pretty much everybody was following him left. Kind of how I felt after Easter. And he turns back to the 12 and he says, hey, what about you guys? You guys going to leave too? And Peter kind of looking around, he just says, where else are we going to go, man? I don't like it. What other options do we have, really? You may not like God. You may not like the reality that God doesn't always come through for you, doesn't always answer your prayer, and that the road that you're on may lead to a cross. But what other options you got? He created you. He formed you. And he gives you this promise that there is a resurrection. And that leads to the second comment that stuck with me from Easter. I have no idea what he was talking about, but I don't think it was Easter. And I got to be honest with you, it kind of made me rethink the whole having an Easter egg hunt thing, because I think that fooled people. I think so. I think that maybe somehow they showed up here thinking that Easter was all about, you know, fuzzy bunnies and painting Easter eggs and chocolate and candy and all the other good stuff that goes along with Easter. And we just kind of go out of here feeling with a smile and getting a few cute pictures of our kids. But I tell you this, when I lost my wife, I didn't need a rabbit's foot, and I didn't need a chicken. I needed truth. I needed something that could help me make sense of what it was that I was going through. I needed the confident assurance that when I held my baby and sent her into Jesus' arms, I'd see her again. As the writer of Hebrews says in Hebrews 11, I wasn't holding out, only trusting God to heal her that day and bring her back to me. my ultimate trust in God, which is what Hebrews 11 says, was a better resurrection. My baby was so broken. She was so hurt. She needed a healing that wasn't going to come here. She needed a healing that no counselor could give her, that no husband could share with her, no friend could speak to her. She needed a healing that could only come by a heavenly Father who takes this little girl up to his arms. Says, "Sweetie, good job. Good job. You're perfect now. Now just dance and become the person I always created you to be. You're so perfect." I needed to know that that better resurrection was out there. But you know, I also needed that confidence that Easter shares with us. When you think about the absurdity of calling Friday Good Friday, there wasn't much good going on that Friday. And yet 2,000 years later, with the perspective of time and God's insight and understanding of what he was doing in that moment, we look back and we call that Good Friday. And it's only Good Friday because Sunday's coming. If you're living life in a really long Saturday, like I am right now, and some of you are too, and you wonder what to make of that Friday, you think, how could anything good come of that Friday? Because on Saturday, you can't see it. I got my eyes on that right now. I can't see it. But Easter tells me Sunday's coming. Oh, yeah. Sunday's coming. He's alive. She's alive. And this life ain't all there is. So this is what it means to follow Jesus. This is what it means to be a Christian. This is what it means to place your faith, an unshakable faith, in a God that doesn't always promise the outcome you want, but has sent his Son, Jesus Christ, so that you may know, that there is a better resurrection. That Sunday's coming. And I got to ask you this morning, are you willing to place your faith in that? I am. Would you join with me as we close?